All right, welcome to Movie Dudes, episode 136. I am Jeff, joined as always by Chris.
Hey.
And we're about to get serious with this Halloween stuff with our review of Friday the 13th and Friday the 13th Part 2. I did want to mention real quick at the top, I did not get a chance to go out and see Mother, so we won't have a review for that this week. But I did get a chance to see The Big Sick, Chris, and that is a pretty great romantic comedy. Really, really liked it. In fact, it's probably, like, it's near the best of the year, like, just overall. Okay. I really loved it, so
I have a
chance to watch it.
I've heard similar things from other people, but, yeah, I've heard it's really good.
Yeah, I had heard, you know, it got really good reviews, and it was kind of a hit in the summer. But I'd also heard reviewers like, hey, man, like, people overhyped this for me. Just, you know, it's a good movie. Don't go in expecting too much. I just went in with an open mind, and I was kind of blown away by it, like, how great it is. So
cool.
I'm one of the people that are, like, overhyping it. But we're not here to discuss The Big Sick. We're here to get into the horror. We're going to start all off with 1980s Friday the 13th. Now, in the late 70s, Sean Cunningham was doing, like, these shitty kids movies as well as, like, shitty softcore porn movies, basically. And he saw the success of Halloween and decided he was going to copy it and kind of use his name that, you know, he was attached to Last House on the Left earlier in the decade. Thought he could kind of parlay that into doing some horror and, like I said, kind of replicating the success of Halloween. He didn't really have much of an idea. He, like, took out an ad in Variety that had the logo for Friday the 13th, which is, like, the big block letters smashing through the glass.
Right.
They put that ad out before he had anything else. He didn't really have an idea except to set a horror movie on a holiday. He called up the screenwriter, Victor Miller, and said, hey, let's rip off Halloween. That's exactly what he's – according to Victor Miller, it's like exactly what he said. It's kind of what they did, sort of.
Maybe.
Well, I mean, we'll get into it. But, like, it is, in my opinion, it's kind of like a transitional slasher film. As the 80s would go on, slasher films become very popular. They're cheap to make. They make a decent amount of money in return. But, you know, and as it went on, it became all about the blood and the gore and body count. And this is, I mean, that's definitely an element in Friday the 13th. But this is also, like, earlier slasher films a lot of times tried to have this, like, sort of mystery to them, like a whodunit angle. And yeah. that definitely plays into what we get in the finished film. And I want to say something about slasher films in general before we get into anything, really. And that is that a lot of critics will kind of look down their nose at them. I think over time they've gotten more respect. And I've brought this up before, but I think it's worth bringing it up again. I want to say it was critic Scott Weinberg said, and I was listening to, like, the 80s All Over podcast. He said, slasher films are basically musicals. It's the same idea. Everything is fluff and filler to get to the next set piece, which in a musical, it's the musical number.
Right.
And in a slasher film, it's the kill.
The kill, yeah.
Yeah, and I agree with that. And there is artistry there, like, especially in the, you know, all the films that we're going to be talking about, basically, like, it's mostly all practical effects. And there's some real artistry there. So anyways, a little bit more about Friday the 13th before we dig into the film. It was made for $550,000.
Wow.
Paramount bought the film for $1.5 million. They spent a half mil in advertising and then a second round of half mil in advertising. So $1 million in advertising overall. So overall, Paramount spent $2.5 million on it, but this was a movie that was made for half a mil. Went on to gross $39 million domestically, $59 million worldwide. In 2017 dollars, that's $177
million. That's pretty damn good.
Yeah, that's pretty good. And this surprised me. It is the highest grossing Friday the 13th film. If you do not count Freddy versus Jason.
Okay.
So just a little bit of background about this film. Not to get into the film itself, I think we're going to have differing opinions on this because this has always been one of my, I won't say it's like one of the worst, and I don't think it's actually bad. I just, it's one of my least favorite to watch. I haven't watched it all the way through in a while.
I can understand that. I also, I want to know kind of your background coming into Friday the 13th. Like, like what, had you seen a Friday the 13th movie before this?
Yes. Okay. I don't remember seeing this one for the first time, but I'm almost, I want to say like 90% positive that I saw probably 2 or 3 or 4 before the first one. I just, for whatever reason, I feel that to be true. Like, do you remember seeing this for the first time?
Yes. And I mean, by the time I saw this, like, Friday the 13th had been out for a while. Like, I probably didn't see this until the late 80s. So it might have been around the time of, like, Jason Takes Manhattan, which is the 8th one, where I kind of got into the series. But so I knew about Jason, but I had never seen a Friday the 13th movie before this. So I think that also colors my opinion of it, I think, in some way. But I could definitely see coming at it from a different perspective where it's not the first one, that it could, you know, paint a different picture for that, the viewer.
I mean, I probably saw this in the late 80s as well, but I want to say by the time that, like, Jason Takes Manhattan was out, I was a Friday 13th freak. Like, I loved the movies. I probably owned a bunch of them on VHS, and I want to say, like, I remember distinctly owning 3 and 4 on VHS and watching those over and over and over, and, you know, we'll get into those next week, but kind of the peak for me. And then I'm almost sure that, like, for whatever reason, the first one was not my first. And for me, like, is this your favorite one? I want to say that you've said that before, but I don't want to put words in
your mouth. Yeah, maybe. We'll see what I say after this rewatch. But coming into it, definitely, it was definitely up there for me. I had not seen this in a few years now.
Yeah, me neither.
And, I don't know. Well, I have some things on it, but I would probably say right now, coming into it, having seen all the movies previously, this one is probably my favorite coming into this rewatch.
Yeah, see, it's, for me, it's just always stood almost apart from the series. Like, to me, it feels like a prequel to the whole series that fills in lore that I didn't really, like, I already knew from stuff they explain later. And that might have to do with how
we'll get into that with 2.
Yeah. Well, and that might have to do with the order I watched. Like, so if I saw 2, 3, and 4, and then I went back to watch 1, then yeah, it's going to feel like a prequel.
Yeah.
But it's even watching it now, it still feels like that. Like, it just, it doesn't feel like a part of all the others. It's so different. I mean, obviously, everyone knows it's not Jason that's killing in this one. It's his mom. But it's just beyond that. It just feels like they were still getting the formula down a little bit.
Sure.
Like, it wasn't a formula yet.
It's a slower paced film too. Because when we get to 2, we'll talk about the lightning quick pace that film moves at. This is an hour and 35 minutes, and at times it feels like an hour and 35 minutes, which isn't a good thing.
Well, it's weird because in my memory that's how it is. Like, I'm like, this one's slow, it's boring, that's why I don't like it as much. But that said, like, as I was watching it again this time for the rewatch, I was kind of like amazed by how quickly it's nighttime, we're in the cabin and we're playing Strip Monopoly. I'm like, it felt like that was like 20 minutes in the movie. I was like, wow, like I know it's probably a little further than that, but it felt like we were getting to things quick, even though it, like, I would say overall, it does kind of feel a little slower than some of them. I mean, look, I don't hate this one. It's just one I just don't prefer watching over and over for whatever reason. There are things about it that it, like, I think are really cool, like. And they're little things, like there's like these like beautiful shots of nature that are just all like,
Oh yeah,
like you just see it, like
there's a
there's a
lot of
beaver,
B-roll.
swimming along and just kind of zooms in. There's like a shot of a couple kissing by the lake. Like, I actually like all that stuff. I don't know. I it's weird. It's like I don't have a problem with this one. It's just I don't prefer it for whatever reason.
Well, I think some of it also comes down to like the killer isn't the killer in the rest. Like Friday the 13th has a very big mystique with Jason. Like Jason is the star of that series, and Friday the 13th Part 1 from 1980, like it's not like it's Jason's mom, and it doesn't really explain either. Like there's no like ooh like secret like in two, like there's like the oh you know like you know they kind of like set up the mystique of Jason, and in this one there's nothing like there's a mysterious person stalking the woods, slowly taking out these people that are working to set up this camp, but you don't know why really like.
Yeah, and that's something I did not remember until I rewatched it. Like, I always thought, and I mean, this is a thing that people say. I have it in my notes. You don't see the killer until the end because this is one of the two films in the series that is a mystery. Although the mystery is poorly defined until what's going on is revealed at the end. Like, it's almost like backwards or something.
Yeah, it's
Like,
like in the let you don't find out until like basically the final girl,
yeah.
like what the mystery here is, why these people are getting killed, what's going on, like what the reasoning behind any of this is.
Yeah, like you get a scene at the beginning where it's a camp in 1958, I want to say.
52, I thought, like,
In the 50s.
yeah, it was in the
And
50s. It was really weird.
they're fucking like playing guitar and singing, and a girl, is it a girl and a guy go off or whatever?
Yeah,
And
they go
they.
into like this cabin, they go upstairs, get a blanket down and look like they're about to get it on. And then somebody comes up and murders them.
Yeah, and then they get killed, and then you're brought to present day, which I'll give this movie some credit here. It's one of the few Friday the 13th that takes place on Friday the 13th. It comes to Friday the
Yeah.
13th, present day, and
And
you're following
there's
this
a very
girl.
explicit reason for that too, so
What is that?
It's Jason's birthday.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, and today is his birthday. Yeah.
Mrs. Voorhees, that's the reason she's doing it all on that day, and Jason was born on
Besides
the 13th, whatever.
the time that she did it before in the 50s, like right after he drowned.
Right, like.
Like, what has she been doing ever since? Like, and we'll get into this too. Like, I feel like she's part of the town still and people know her. Like, yeah, like
Because I'm drawing a blank on the guy's name,
the head counselor.
Steve Christie, the guy who, yeah, the head counselor, the guy who's kind of like running the camp. He knows who she is. Like, he's not surprised by her.
Yeah.
Like he has a friendly kind of rapport with her, so it's weird.
You're talking about when he is trying to get back to the camp late at night and it's like raining out and stuff.
Yeah.
And okay, yeah.
And
Because we
like,
get another point of view shot from the killer and he goes, "Oh, hey, it's you. What are you doing out here?" And then she
right.
kills him. I'm like, that was, I had to take a note of that because I'd never really thought about that before. I'm like, he knows who she is. So she's like, somehow been in this town covering up the fact that she committed murders in the 50s and she's completely nuts and somehow people don't know. It's kind of strange. Yeah, so that's like one of the weird things about it, I think, is that like We come in with this girl who's heading into the town, and she hitchhikes, and this guy kind of explains to her that you don't want to go to Camp Blood, some bad things happen. They kind of give a very loose outline of what's going on, but you never sit there going, okay, so then who's the killer? Because none of it any makes sense until the end when
Right.
you see Betsy Palmer and she explains she's Mrs. Voorhees and she's doing this to avenge her son because camp counselors are horny and they're not paying attention. It's just weird. It's like all this info gets dumped at the end,
Yeah, like at the very, very end.
but the whole beginning, you are just, I mean, I guess I just, because again, maybe because I watched them backwards, I'd always assumed that the mystery was better defined than it was, because it's really not. You're just like, okay, someone's killing these people one by one, and we don't
Yeah,
know why,
and
and then we
all we
eventually
know
find
about
out.
is that the camp that they're at has a bad reputation, and the locals don't really want to go near it.
So, let's see, I'm just looking through some of my other notes. I think one reason that this film was successful, and I think a big reason why it really works, I think, is because of the score. I think Manfredini's score is really, really good in this. Including not just like the ch-ch-ch-ch, like all that stuff, but really beautiful music at the end. I love the little piece he does at the end when they're trying to throw you off guard and
Well,
give you
when
that final
she's just
scare.
kind of floating in the canoe and
Yeah.
cops are coming up. Yeah, it's nice.
I think that that largely makes this feel like a real movie. If you got some nice cinematography and stuff in there, and you got this beautiful music that is, covering up for what is kind of a shoddy script and, no character development really.
No.
I'm just kidding. I don't know if you have any notes, but I'm just gonna go through some of my notes here and discuss them real quick. The town crazy Ralph, do we need him?
Well, I guess we sh I want to touch on this in conjunction with two, because he shows up in two. And I would have loved that he is just kind of like the Herald of Doom. Like, if he had kept showing up, like, for each of the movies, he dies in the second one. But I would have loved if, like, each movie he would have been like the Herald, like, you don't want to go there. It's going to be bad. Like, it just would have been great. Like, and I thought, like, hey, that's hysterical that he's back in the second one. But then he dies, and like that shot, all that, because I didn't remember him at all.
It's just, I don't know, something about, I think he's in there so that you think maybe he's the killer, but, I don't think it's ever convincing that he could be. He just seems like a kind of a nut that's trying to warn people
Yeah,
about stuff.
they never build him up as being threatening. Like, he's kind of portrayed as like the crazy, but he's portrayed as like the kooky crazy, not the I'm dangerous crazy.
Well, there is a part, and I want to say it's part one, where he's inside their pantry or something. He's just in there, and they're like, "What the fuck, old man?" And he's like, "You guys gotta get the fuck out of here!" And then he rides off on his bike, and I'm like, "That's fucking weird." But okay, I mean, I kind of like him, I guess, but it feels like they put him in there for a reason that doesn't totally work.
No, because there's no development of it. Like, there's no, we're gonna develop why they shouldn't be there, and we're gonna kind of like, and even if they had developed Ralph a little bit, like to the point of like Ralph was, he was a counselor at that camp, and like the events there drove him crazy, and he's like trying to keep you away. Like, they don't ever build him as a character, because they don't ever build any of the characters really outside of maybe Mrs. Voorhees.
Yeah, so yeah, I mean, I don't know. I guess I'm neither here nor here there on him, but I just, that was something that when I was watching it, I'm like, do we need this guy? Another note, who the hell wears a nightgown? I just thought it was weird. I don't know. Maybe that was more common back then, or maybe people do wear nightgowns and I don't know about it.
Well, it's funny. So I was out at a wedding out in a Lancaster over the weekend, and you had said that you had watched them last week. And I'm sitting there in the lobby. We're waiting for pizza to show up. It's like 10:30, 11 o'clock at night, and this like older lady comes downstairs and she goes outside in the front of the hotel to smoke a cigarette in a nightgown. I felt I had to text you. there's a lady here wearing a fucking nightgown.
Yeah, you know who wears a nightgown? My grandma. Like, I don't know. Like, these people are like 20 years old, or I don't know how old they're supposed to be, but I just didn't buy it. I was like, that's, I mean, maybe that's like a thing still because it's 1980 or whatever. And the, I don't know.
I think it's more of like a time period type thing. Like,
another note, who exactly is with who? Are they all just fucking each other? And the reason I wrote that down is because Adrian King, the final girl in this,
mm-hmm.
early on, it's kind of set up that the head counselor and her, like there's something going on between them. Yeah. But then near the end of the movie, like this other guy like kind of reaches over and I think he gives her a kiss or at least touches her cheek. And I'm like, is she fucking two of the different guys here? Like, and she, I don't know. I felt like the relationships were poorly defined of who's with who. It seemed like there was like some jealousy going on between some of the characters. I don't know.
So the ones that came in on the truck, Kevin Bacon's character, and yes, Kevin Bacon is in this movie. Jack, Marcy, who was in the truck, and Ned, who they were the three that are kind of like in the truck going out there to start. At those three, I think Ned is jealous of Jack and Marcy.
He
wants a piece of Marcy, I think, and she's not she doesn't reciprocate towards him, so.
Okay, I think that came off, but then the part that I'm talking about with Adrian King, like the final girl and the two guys, like I don't understand what's going on there.
I don't know who the other one was. Was it the
guy that they're playing Strip Monopoly with? I want to say it's him. He like they're like freaking out and like they're checking the Jeep and like they're trying to get out of there and he like they go to separate and he like I want to say he gives her a kiss or like. Definitely something affectionate where I'm just like, okay.
That kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah, like is something going on with them now? Because you said earlier in the movie that, or like at least set up earlier in the movie that something's going on with her and the head counselor. I don't know. I just thought that was like a weird thing. And I think it kind of comes back again in the series because I think a lot of times these characters are not super fleshed out and they're just kind of winging it. Okay, and then I have another little note I wrote was there's some cheap and off-screen kills. There's some fantastic kills too in this, so I can't really.
There's more off-screen kills in this than in the second one. There's off-screen kills in the second one too.
Yeah,
it feels a little cheap because, as you said, like a slasher film is kind of like a musical
built around them.
Where you're going for these kills, and yet, while there are some great kills in this movie, there are ones that are just, you never see them, so it feels cheapened by it.
Yeah, it's just like, I feel like I got robbed of a couple, and that's probably another reason why, like, when I was younger, this is one of my least favorite ones. Like, rewatching it now, like, I do appreciate a lot of things about it, but like I said, it stands apart, and it is a little... just not one of my favorites. But I have more stuff concerning this. We already discussed the head counselor knowing who she is. The final girl running around discovering all the dead bodies. I just wanted to note that is totally straight out of Halloween. When Victor Miller...
Yeah. But it's super effective. It's fun. It's a fun... like, it's a fun horror house type thing. Like, it's like,
I mean, and it is kind of like, you know, this movie and Halloween before it, they're like establishing this formula, and that I think this is starting to cement that as part of the formula. But it is really like Victor Miller, when he wrote the script for this, he was not like a huge horror movie person, and so he went out and saw Halloween and he just took notes and copied it. So like when I saw her running around discovering all the bodies at the end, I'm like, that's totally him just going, all right, now you do this. And now we get to the really fun stuff, which is like the last 20 minutes or so.
Yeah.
Just, all right. I got a big question.
Okay.
Why does Mrs. Voorhees kill everyone except the final girl, but then decides to play games with the final girl and like tell her stories and tell her everything and chase her around and call her like a little bitch or whatever she does? Like, what is up with that, dude?
I don't know. It's hysterical. It's almost like she's a Bond villain at that point, like where it's like
Yeah,
now I
she's gonna
need
tell you
to
everything.
explain to you exactly what has happened, and to make it more theatrical, we'll have it so that like you defeat me a little bit, then I catch up to you and I do a little bit of damage, and then but you fight back and are able to push me off, and we play the cat and mouse game because that's exciting.
And it is. I
Yeah.
mean, it is. I love the cat and mouse at the end of a horror movie. Like, that is like when I was a kid, I used to, I watched Halloween a billion times, but like what I did after the first 20 times or so was I would just watch the last 20 minutes. That part is so fun.
And I think what makes it work here, like I love it in Halloween and even in later Friday the 13th movies, and but I think what makes it super effective here is that it's almost believable, right? Like
Sure. Yeah. Well,
Mrs.
we'll get
Voorhees
into that.
isn't, she's not Jason, she's not Michael. Like they are these weird like shape embodiments, like where
They're supernatural.
yeah,
She's not.
she's a real person, right? Like, and Alice is a real person. So, like, she's fighting back against this psycho, and it's believable that she could actually maybe beat Mrs. Voorhees, even though Mrs. Voorhees has like magically killed everybody else in camp, but and done so quite easily.
There is, I mean, yes, for the most part, I like this whole part of the movie, but one of the things that I found like stuck out and I found hilarious is when she starts slapping the shit out of Adrienne King. I was just like, she's talking shit to her, also she just like starts smacking her around, and I was just
She
fucking
smacks
dying
her a couple
laughing.
times and then she throws her over in the other and she runs over there and smacks her a couple more times.
Like, I don't know why. Like, maybe it played better at the time, or maybe I'm like watching it a little too closely because I'm taking notes and stuff, for it. But I just started fucking laughing. I'm like, this is ridiculous. For the
It's
most part,
a
it's
bit
fun,
absurd.
but that is just fucking. That's one of two times I died laughing in these first two movies, and that the next one's coming in part two. But I guess one thing we should discuss here too is like Betsy Palmer. Is it a good performance or not?
I sure. I think it is. Like what she's given to work with, she does a really good job. Like, and when she is finally able to turn it on, and like we finally see her, and she is able to kind of like give that exposition on why she's doing it. Like she's believable as like a super crazy person. And then like the cat and mouse game starts and it's like she's like ratcheting up the crazy each and every time. So yeah, I do think it's a good performance. Like for what this movie is, she delivers.
Yeah, I actually think she does a good job too with the material she's given. It's just, like I said, it's always gonna be weird to me now that that all this like the whole mystery is saved until the end. I think it's just somehow a mistake of script writing. Like, they could have found a way to work it earlier instead of having her have to dump everything at the end. But what she's given to do, she does a good job. And like you said, she does seem to get crazier and crazier as it goes on. And she does look crazy in the eyes. And I think it's a fun performance, actually. And also when she gets her head cut off, I don't know.
It's fantastic because I mean she's sitting there, she's like she looks like she's gonna reach out and like I'm gonna kill Alice now, like but Alice has grabbed the machete and in slow motion Alice is like charging her and swings and she cleanly chops off Mrs. Voorhees' head and then you just see her hands like clutching at the air like victory like And you said you could see the toothpicks. I didn't like look closely enough. I should have gone back and looked, but
Yeah, because it's just a dummy, and they put a dummy head on top, and all that was holding it there was some toothpicks, and Agent King just whacked at them with a real machete. And so then, knowing that, I like watched the scene real close, and you could see like three or four toothpicks sticking out of the stump,
it's great.
as well as the hands that reach out, which is ridiculous. Like, I mean, I guess supposedly, chickens do run around with their, after their heads are cut off, I guess. So I don't know. Maybe there's some explanation for it,
Your
but
muscles are still going to be kind of like working for a short period of time. But it's absurd. Just kind of like a chicken running around without a head. It's goofy
yeah.
looking.
But those hands are not Betsy Palmer's. I forgot who they were, but there's some guy's hands. Like if you look at them close, the knuckles are
They're
all hairy.
okay.
So,
That's great.
I don't know if you, I mean, that's kind of my notes that I had about it. I guess we could talk a little bit too about like after it released, got some backlash. By the way, it released in May of 1980. Just forget, I don't know if I mentioned that at the top. It's the same month that The Shining and Empire Strikes Back came out.
Ooh.
At the end of the year, it was nominated for Worst Picture at the first annual Golden Raspberry Awards, which we now know as the Razzies. It did not win. I forgot what won, but it was not Friday the 13th. And I think, like, looking back now, I think critics realized that they were a little too harsh on these movies. This is not a bad movie. Like,
No.
it's fun for what it is. I mean, yes, it doesn't have the best script ever, but it's a pretty competent film. Siskel and Ebert did not like it, though. They at the time were railing against slasher films, to the point where they dedicated a whole episode of their show to how much they hated this. And Siskel even went as far as to like dox some of the fucking people that were like involved in this, like giving them their home. Like I want to say, like in his print review, he gave out like the home address of some people that worked on this. I'm like, dude, that's not professional, I don't think.
Yeah, no.
I guess they're struggling with it at the time, and at the time, like when slasher films got really popular, there were tons of them out every week. So I'm sure they got like, at first like, yeah, Halloween was great, but this is endless and pointless, and most of these movies are bad. But I mean, I think as a professional film critic, you have to find something in even stuff you don't like, I guess. I don't know. It shouldn't just be like, these movies are terrible. They don't deserve to be made. And by the way, here's the home addresses of people that worked
No,
on the movies. Like,
that's fucked up.
I don't know. Before we get to our scores, I don't know if there's anything that you had wanted to touch on that I didn't. I know I was scattered all over the place with this one.
No, I think that's perfectly fine. Like, we covered pretty much everything. I don't know. Did you want to save our favorite kills till the end?
No, let's do it first. So, favorite kill.
So mine for this one is Jack, which is Kevin Bacon. He is
Arrow
laying on
through
the
the.
bed, and the arrow
Yeah.
comes from underneath the bed through his neck. It's awesome.
That's mine as well. I mean, I think it's an obvious favorite. I think if you polled fans, 90% plus would say it's the best kill. Cool thing about that kill is, when they're pushing the arrow through the neck, the tube that was squirting blood like broke. So one of the guy that was working the prop, he like just reached out and grabbed the tube and like used his mouth to fucking squirt the blood up out. So
Oh, Christ.
when you see like the, like how it like kind of spurts up, like there's like kind of like a stream that like goes up, that's the guy blowing through the tube. Yeah, I think it's one of Savini's best effects in this one for sure. It's so easily my favorite kill. Our other category here, favorite girl. Because let's be honest, a big part of these movies are, seeing young people run around naked. So, favorite girl.
I think she's the only one that actually gets naked in this movie, is Marcy.
Yeah. Same. I just think she's most attractive.
That's kind of where I went with that. Like,
Yeah. I mean, that's somewhere I'm going to go with it most times, but yeah, I don't think the lead, I don't think Adrian King is particularly attractive, and
No, she's
whatever.
fine. But like when you look at you kind of like look at Marcy, like she's a very pretty girl, and
Yeah, like she shines through like the 80s fashion to still be a stunning looking woman.
like I'm currently looking at some pictures on IMDb of her from the movie, and it's like she's wearing some terrible clothes, has some terrible hair, but like she has a beautiful face. And like there's a shot of her when she's in the bathroom. She at that point she had gotten kind of reclothed after her encounter with Jack, and she had put a rain slicker on to go to the bathroom, and she takes the rain slicker off, and then she's like just in like panties and a pink shirt, and she's like really good looking.
And I kind of like her personality in that part too. She's like doing some line in the mirror and stuff too. Like,
Yeah.
all right. So that's Friday the 13th, part one, and our final score, Chris. Oh, I guess we should explain our score here before we do it, which is we're grading on a little bit of a curve, just based on the thought that most of these movies are probably two or threes if we're being totally objective and judging them amongst like every film out there. But we're doing a little curve of four Friday 13th movies. So like, is it a one or a five Friday the 13th movie, or two or three or four? So with that, all that said, what's your score for Friday the 13th?
I'm gonna go with a four here. I bounced back and forth on this a bit. Coming off of it, I was not as high on it as I remember being, but I still think it's like it's a really good start to the series, and it's fun. It's a fun movie. There's like I think that Betsy Palmer at the end, like that whole thing with Alice back and forth with Miss Voorhees, like it's really good. It's really solid, and it's a really great setup for what's going to happen in the next one. So,
That's probably correct, but I have to be honest. Just like I said, I don't. It's not like I'm saying it's bad or anything, but for me, just in terms of preference, it's super in the middle or on the lower end even. So
sure.
I'm gonna give it a three.
All right.
I understand it's like the original classic that started it at all, but to me, it's even still to this day, it doesn't feel like it's part of it. You know what I think is a good start to the series is Friday the 13th Part Two.
Okay.
All right, so a few little facts about it before we get into it. It came out in April 1981, and if you recall, Friday the 13th came out in May of 1980. So this came out less than a year after Friday the 13th premiered. That's crazy.
Yeah.
You don't get sequel turnaround like that, I don't think, almost anywhere ever. They didn't know what to do with the sequel. I mean, Sean Cunningham was like, Paramount wanted to do a sequel based on all the money that they made. And Sean Cunningham was like, well, we killed the entire cast of characters and we killed the villain. So what are we going to do? So I think he kind of didn't have a ton of involvement in this because he was like, I don't know. And so he gave it to the associate producer from the first film, Steve Miner, got the directing job on this. And they had a couple screenwriters come out with the screenplay like months after the first one came out. But this one, it sets up what is the rest of the series, and that it's about Jason Voorhees killing kids at Crystal Lake. So yeah, let's just get into it. It
Sure.
starts off with this weird scene or sequence that takes place outside of Crystal Lake, and I don't know if it's disclosed where it is.
I'm going to assume it is somewhere close by in New Jersey. It's going to be my guess, because it is established that Alice lives in California, or that's where her family is from. In the first movie, she's obviously not there.
True, she's on the phone with her mom and stuff. And Yeah, I guess I would accept that explanation. Also, because too, like, if you're gonna go work as a camp counselor, you're probably not gonna go like super far to do that. You know what I mean? So
Right.
it would make sense that it would be in New Jersey somewhere. Like, which, by the way, like, I don't know if a lot of people know it. It's totally in New Jersey. It's set up a lot early on in the series that it's in New Jersey. They never like outright say it, but there's a lot of signage and stuff. But I guess what I think is, I like how it kind of starts with like this kid like walking through the ring saying "Itsy Bitsy Spider," and he gets called in by his mom. He's like, "Oh, mom!" And then you see like Jason's shoes, and he like shows up and starts walking, down the street,
Right.
and kind of like moves in on Alice in her house, talking to her mom and stuff, and just farting around her house. But I
For
guess what's weird to
11 minutes.
Yeah, is that you timed it?
Well, so the first 6 minutes are like a weird flashback sequence, right? Like where Alice is asleep, but she's like having nightmares.
Yeah, so kind of works as like a previously on, like kind of a recap. And which you do get a lot early on in the series, and I love that shit. Like, I wish more movies would. Well, I mean, it comes off as corny and cheesy now, but I just love it. I guess what I find weird about this whole part is the fact that he like leaves Crystal Lake to go do this.
Yeah.
I guess it makes sense why he would want to kill her, obviously, because to get revenge on his for his mom. But then it doesn't make sense why he'd want to kill everyone else in the world after that that comes to Crystal Lake. Maybe he just wants his territory or whatever. But it's 'cause if you take the premise that he's like this freak who is like almost like a zombie or whatever, or let's say he survived the drowning and he's like this kind of retarded boy who's been living in the woods,
Yeah, so that's
like.
kind of how they set it up here with Ginny, right? Ginny is she's the final girl
Our
here,
new final girl, yeah.
and she is she's going to school for psychology, and they kind of play off that a little bit like throughout the movie, and she makes some kind of like maybe not diagnosis, but she makes some guesses as to what Jason would be like if he were real and if he were still around. And they kind of play off of that like throughout this whole thing, and that's ultimately how she defeats him, but
Yeah, but even before any of that, I mean, we got a glimpse of him at the end of part one, which we didn't really talk about that scene, but I think it's a cool final scare.
yeah.
You see, he has like this misshapen head, and he's like obviously not, totally normal boy or whatever. Let's say like he wasn't dead yet, and he lived, and all this blah blah blah, and you're kind of assuming he's the killer in this. I mean, the movie kind of assumes it through most of it, I guess.
Yeah, there's no like, I mean, much like the first one, like you're not really given an indication of who it is, but they do a better job of setting it up that
Yeah.
there's this, darkness around Crystal Lake, around Camp Blood. Jason drowned, and there's like he still haunts the grounds or whatever, like.
Yeah. Yeah, and just taking all of this into account, the fact that he like travels away from Crystal Lake to go kill her, like I just find it strangely like it's just unbelievable or like doesn't fit.
It doesn't fit. I understand wanting to wrap up loose ends,
And
but it doesn't. It does not fit with the character that they make here. Outside of that first 11 minutes, it does not fit with the Jason they present.
yeah, so I mean, it's not a huge deal. And I the reason all of this happens in actuality is because Adrienne King was not going to be the main character in this. A lot of fans would have liked her to come back, I guess. I don't care either way. The story surrounding it is a little conflicted. It's like the main thing that most people say is her agent wanted more money for her to do this, and Paramount was like, no. So you'll come back, we'll kill you off. You'll get a paycheck out of it, but we're not going to pay you to be like the lead in this movie. She claims otherwise. She did have a stalker around that time, so I don't know if that plays into it. But she does claim, like, and she, like, kind of disappeared from public life because of a stalker who, like, attacked her, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if she blames that on why she didn't want to play a big role in it or not, but she does say, like, she wished that she had played a bigger role, and she kind of denies the fact that it was about money. I don't know. We'll never know. There's a lot of things in this. In fact, there's in this Friday the 13th Part 2, there's a lot of dispute over who the fuck Jason actually is, like, who played him.
Oh, really?
Yeah. What, so, for instance, in this opening scene, the person who plays him is a woman. It's one of the, I forgot her name, but she was the costume designer in the film, and they just got her to play it for when they filmed this. I, who supposedly played Jason, was, he tried out for the part of the head counselor in Part 2, didn't get it, so they offered him the Jason job, but then they found out he couldn't, like, do the stunts that they wanted him to do, so they had to hire a stuntman to do the stunts that Jason did. And the stuntman's kind of like, well, dude, that's kind of most of what Jason is. So I feel like I'm the guy that played Jason. And so, like, there's this whole argument about, like, you know, the guy who did the stunts, he's like, I did most of the work. And the other guy who...
I can buy that.
So, yeah, I don't know. You weren't familiar with this whole thing.
No. I'm looking at that now. Warrington Gillette is credited as Jason, but Steve Dash is credited as the Jason stunt double.
Yeah, but the guy who, like, we see at the end of this film, like, without his hood on or the sack on, is the Gillette guy, and, you know, he's the guy who sat in a chair putting on 6 hours of makeup to do that shit. Like, so it's like, I don't know,
like, you know, six of one, half dozen of the other.
Yeah, it's weird. It's just weird that you can't say who, but, like, that's also true of fucking the original Halloween, so I guess it's not really a big deal. But anyways, moving past, like, the opening scene and just getting into this movie in general, I don't know, there's a couple things I love about it. Like, I'll just say right off the top of the bat, like, I think this is, like, a really good kind of prototype for what a slasher movie should be and what a Jason movie should be. Like, I think this one goes down super smooth. It's got some cool kills. It's got, like, a larger, more likable cast of characters. And it has a couple scenes that I really love. Like, one scene you already mentioned, Amy Steele, Jenny, when they're, like, at that casino bar place. Like, mm-hmm. She's, like, you know, talking about, yeah, like, where did he come from? Like, I kind of like that whole, like, her just imagining what his life was like and, like, kind of setting up his character more in a way. I also love the campfire scene where the head counselor is telling them the whole tale of Jason, and they like, scare everybody. I don't know. I just think it's a cool, like, they get to use that again later in the series as, like, a part of a recap of what's going on. Yeah, love that.
They do a good job. They do a much better job than what they did in one of setting up the killer.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know, like, what are some of your thoughts about it? I don't want to, like, steer the entire... I have I have a lot of notes for this one, too. Holy fuck.
So, like, you mentioned there's a large cast of characters, and there is. But weirdly, like, and I mean, there's, like, 15, 20 counselors at this camp. But then they do this weird thing where they go off to this casino, and they pick up, and it's, like... all but six of them are left at the camp. And it's like, all right, well, here's your six that are going to die. And then, like, they also bring it. They bring back to the Ginny and Paul or Mark, or I think it's Paul. Mark is the handicapped guy. They bring them back as well. That sets up the finale. But it's like, there's all these people, and now we're going to pull them all away. And so there's going to be six people.
Yeah, but the ones I think we are left with, I find, like, just more memorable, kind of, than the ones in the original.
Sure.
Even if it's just, like, really stupid, easy, lazy things, like, this guy's in a wheelchair, so...
Yeah, there's him. More defining kind of points to them, like, Mark is in a wheelchair, what's her name? Vicky is, she's the one that... You know, she's kind of in the mark, and like you kind of see her pining for him. You get the Sandra and I don't know if it's Jeff or Scott that are the characters for them that like they're together and they're the ones that kind of run off to explore Camp Blood and get caught. And then there's the sporty girl and this other guy who's kind of like a creep. Like, but they're all defined. They all have more defined personalities and roles than maybe in the first movie.
You get the kind of like prankster guy again, who like there's a guy like that in the first one. You get him again in this one, and then you get that perfectly distilled in part three, which we'll get to next week. But it's like very early on in these movies, for whatever reason, they thought there had to be like an annoying guy who like did things to get attention or whatever. Which I just love in part three, but we're still in part two. In part two, there's a guy I have written down as the creeper dude. Who there's a scene where they're like walking down a trail, and this girl, like I forgot which girl, like I want to say it's the girl with like the Mickey Mouse shirt. She's walking, and he pops out of the bushes and like shoots her in the ass with a slingshot,
Oh
and
yeah. It's hurt.
she turns around and looks at him, and he's just gives her this goofy ass smile,
Yeah,
and
that's
I'm.
Scott. That's the it's the guy who ends up he also steals her clothes.
Yes. And he just gives her this look, and me and my girlfriend, we had a buzz going, but like we both started bursting out laughing at the stupid look on this guy, and we like replayed that like five times in a row, just laughing so hard each time. And then like shortly after that, they're all kind of like partying in the cabin. And you see like everyone's kind of like hanging out, and he's standing in the fucking corner by himself against the window. And then he like pops his collar and walks over and tries to be all smooth. And the girl like doesn't really respond to him. He just starts acting like he's been talking to the dog, and then he dances with the fucking dog. Like, I don't know. I love it, dude. Like, I just feel like there's more fun things like that in this one. And especially like I just got a kick. I don't know how they expected him to come off when they made it, but he just comes off like a total creeper now. It's totally hilarious.
It works real well.
Let's see, what else do I have here? I guess this might be true. I wrote almost an hour in before the killing starts.
It's probably about 40 minutes or so. 'Cause I mean, this movie's only 87 minutes long, and ultimately, if you take out the 11 minutes with the intro sequence, the first, the wrapping up of Alice and the credits, which is 11 minutes. And this movie's only like 75 minutes long or something like that.
Which is crazy. Like, that's what like movies used to be when they first started making movies, pretty much.
Right. Like this is a very like distilled version of a horror film. And I don't mind that at all. Like, I enjoy a quick movie, yeah, it's probably about another half hour, 40 minutes before anything else happens in the film. I
But I
think
wasn't bored
the
by
next
it.
kill is the police officer. He's well, I guess the first kill outside of the credits. It's when he stumbles upon the shed.
Okay,
And
yeah.
that's still during the day, so that's before. That's after he's caught Sandra and Jeff, kind of snooping around Camp Blood. He brings them back to Paul, and he's like gets a little angry that they haven't been reprimanded. And then on his way out of the new camp, he sees like a somebody running across the street into the woods. He takes chase and ends up in this shack thing, and he gets hit in the back of the head with a hammer.
Okay, yeah. I guess you know what? I think I was forgetting about him when I watched it, and then like I recorded the next kill as the first one,
Yeah, and
and that
it's like
was for
10 or
about an
so minutes
hour.
after that before anything actually
Yeah,
starts. So
but like I was gonna say, I didn't really feel bored as I set it up. I kind of like hanging out with these characters,
yeah.
I'm honestly kind of impressed by how well this thing works all around, considering like they wrote it and shot it and everything and released it within 11 months. Like, that's crazy to me. I do think like the like speaking of the cat and mouse climax, I think this one is awesome, dude. Like, just him pacing around, the pitchfork coming through the door, or when she like runs into the car and like he fucking pushes the pitchfork through the roof of the car.
Yeah, it's a great sequence. There's some like really goofy things though, like where like when he puts the pitchfork through the door, she somehow opens the door on the other side and kicks it and like knocks him down a hill.
Yeah, sure. I mean, there's still, and it's, I mean, he is still basically human in this one. Like, he doesn't seem to have any sort of supernatural power. So, she could knock him down. And when you get to like 8 or 9, he'll just stand there like a rock. And you know,
He's a supernatural monster at that point. Like at this point, he is just kind of like a feral person that lives out in the woods. One thing I did kind of want to cycle back on though is
sure.
so at the end of Friday 13th, Jason jumps out of the water, grabs Alice from the canoe and pulls her under. And then the next scene, like she wakes up in the hospital and she's like,
Yeah.
where's, is the boy dead too? Like there was no boy. Then he's still out there. But
Yeah.
this movie supposedly takes place 5 years later, and that boy has bulked up a fucking lot. Like, and also he shouldn't have been a boy in 1980. Like, it, even if it was like, 1958, like you were saying,
Yeah.
or whatever, like that's 22 years if he was 0 years old when she murdered those counselors. And you would figure he was what, like maybe 9 or 10 at that point. So he could be like in his mid 30s, by this film. He shouldn't be a little boy jumping out of the water. And I don't, it's not that I don't buy his size in this, but it's like what, like there's a little bit of disconnect between, the two.
Sloppy.
Like, yeah, was Alice, was she envisioning the boy? Like, did he not actually pull her under? And that was just like a poof, here it is. And instead it was this feral kid that was kind of been like, he drowned. They thought he was dead. They never recovered his body, and his mom like went crazy, killed some people, and he's never been able to kind of go back to her. So he's lived in the woods and done crazy shit for the next, 30 years or whatever.
Yeah, I think.
Because I like that idea more than like the weird, he's grown supernatural muscles in 5 years.
Well, yeah, no, I think it's kind of sloppily. They didn't think about it that much, you know. And I think like when they made the first one, that scare at the end was just about getting a scare at the end. Or like,
Yeah, it
you
was
know,
a fun.
the creepy boy drowned in the lake, so we're gonna have the creepy boy jump out of the lake.
Yeah.
Which again, that also doesn't make sense because just because someone drowns in the lake doesn't mean that you won't get the body out of the lake and
Right.
bury it. Like,
Like, and
and that.
it's a lake. It's not a it's not like he got lost in the ocean, like he might not ever get the body.
And like, and that comes up like again later in the series. But anyways, but yeah, I think they were just going for a scare. And I think, but like when they did that original one, it was, even though she says, "Oh, well, he must be still be out there," I think it was still supposed to be like she was just so traumatized by the event
Right,
that
maybe
she
she was
imagined
seeing
it.
it, yeah.
But then they use that as the basis to hop into the sequel. So then it does come off as like, well, then what the fuck?
Right. Did it
Like,
really happen, or was like Jason really out there and he saw her kill his mom and
that's a great point. I didn't even consider that. I don't know, dude. Like,
it does set up some great mythology though, like in this movie, like they get out to that. So when the police officer gets out to the shack, like he sees something, but they do, like they do in a lot of horror films and slasher films in general, they show you something well, they show the character something, but they don't show you it. So there's a mystery behind what's behind door number two. And Jason kills the cop, and we're left wondering what it is. And then what you find out is that, like, Jason has built a shrine to his dead mother.
Yeah. And yeah, that's something we should definitely touch on. Like, I love the concept of him living in a shack that he's, like, kind of built, and him having that little shrine in there. Like, yeah. I think that's awesome. I think that is one of my favorite things about the remake, that they kept that. I think that's something that they shouldn't have got away from. Like, the series gets away from that. Like, it's a cool idea. And, like, yeah, there has to be some explanation. Like, if we're going on the assumption that this movie's going on, is that he's, like, a human who survived this thing, but he's just kind of fucked up, and he's just been surviving in the woods. And he saw his mom die, and he's going apeshit. Like, that's an awesome idea that he's just kind of, like, built a shack for himself in the middle of the woods, and he's, like, knows what he's doing in the woods and shit. Like, I don't know.
Yeah,
they definitely they build on that in the remake. Like, and I really dig that. When we get to that, we'll discuss that more. But, like, yeah, it's a really cool thing. And, oh, yeah, one other thing I want to get to from my – going back to my notes is there's a – like a spooky new theme, because I like I said, I love the score in these movies, and in this one, like, he has like a kind of like this spookier theme. Like, it's kind of when he's chasing around, they do it a little bit, and like they'll show shots of the moonlight, but then they definitely play it again. Like, you'll remember at the end when she's confronting him in the shack, and she's like trying to convince him that she's Mrs. Voorhees. Like, the music there is more like spacey and weird than the rest of it. I don't know if you remember that or you could recall, but
No.
Yeah, look up that scene. Like, you'll definitely be like, oh yeah, I know what he's talking about. It's different than the main theme. Like, it's new to the series at that point. And I don't know that they use it again, but it's awesome in this. Also in the climax, like, there's a part where she hides under the bed from him, and like there's like a rat down there.
Oh yeah, and she pees herself.
Okay, that was my note. I wrote, did Amy Steele piss herself when she's hiding under the bed? Because I'm like, I swear I saw a shot of piss coming out from under the bed.
Yes, and Jason sees it as well. So the rat comes by, like, they play up the rat, like it's on the other side of the room, and you know, then you see Jason kind of walking through, and you see Ginny under the bed, and she's looking at this rat, and then the rat comes up, and it's like right by Ginny's face, and then they pan back to the other side of the bed, and you see like this yellow liquid kind of flow out the back of the bed, and it kind of pans to Jason's feet, because don't really think they were looking at his head quite at that point, but you see he kind of turns a bit, and then you hear the noise of like the door opening and closing, and he's really great at being silent. Like, he's like a fucking hitman, because he's then able to get a chair, set it up, and get himself on it with the pitchfork as Jenny climbs out. It's great.
And the ending, well, we'll get to the very end at some point, because I think the very end is all sorts of fucked up. But like the final showdown with her and him, I think it's pretty cool, like her convincing him that like she's his mom. She kind of gets him off guard.
Oh, it's brilliant. Like, it plays to her psychology background. Like, it shows that the writers here at least understood that these were characters, and that they could build on and call back to things that happened in the film. To make it more believable and to make it more dynamic.
And she like buries the machete like in his shoulder. I thought that was pretty cool. Yeah. I would have tried to pull it out and done a little more damage, but funny thing about that scene is she like nearly cut off the fucking stuntman's middle finger.
Really?
She like accidentally hit him with the machete like in the hand or some shit. And I guess she didn't thought it was a prop one or whatever. And he had to go to the fucking hospital and get like 13 stitches on his middle finger. And going to the hospital with the machete in his shoulder, like the prop one. So he walks into the emergency room. They're like, what the fuck? But anyways, yeah, I like the ending. But then after that, like, I think it gets a little. I think there's another good jump scare at the end of this one with him coming through the window. Like, it's, I think it's very effective, but it's like
Oh, but
so confusing.
she's in the bathroom, like she's holding the door, trying to get to the window, and she finally lets go, and then she gets over to the window, and like he kind of busts through that way. Yeah, it's really good.
No, it's like when
Oh, at the end.
yeah, the very like she's sitting there like they're like, oh, the dog's alive, and the dog's running in, and she like goes to staff to grab the dog.
He jumps through the window. Yeah.
Like, I think that's a very good jump scare, but then it like cuts from that, or like I think it like fades to white or whatever, and then it cuts to she's getting put in the back of an ambulance, and she's like,
Yes.
where's Paul? Where's Paul? And you're like, yeah, where is Paul? What happened? Like, I thought Jason just busted in and was about to kill all y'all, and now you're in the back of an ambulance. Like, what happened here? Where did Jason go?
Yeah.
Like, and it's especially weird because, like, you know, when we start the third one, like, that's not how anything goes down. Like, Jason just survives that shit and fucking runs away for a little bit to recover or whatever. Like, he doesn't go attack them. So, what really happened at the end here? I have no idea.
So, are these sequences that are happening at the end, are they hallucinations? Like, because Alice has
Yeah.
one, and now Ginny seemingly has one.
And they do it more.
Yeah.
They do it in, I want to say they do it in three for sure.
So
So,
maybe
yeah.
there's these like hallucinations that end the movie, like making it confusing for everybody.
I know, because they're never like it would be okay to accept this hallucination, but like I said, like that hallucination in one sets up part two, kind of. So like, and then but then this one kind of gets discarded within the movie itself because, well, it's the same thing where she, all of a sudden she's like with medical personnel and she's like, what the fuck's going on? But then where the fuck is Paul? Where did he, like,
Right.
if I don't know, it's just fucking messy, I guess, but overall, I really like part two. Like I said, I think it's like a good blueprint for what a good Jason movie should be. What do you think overall of it?
It's a fun addition to the series. I think it's actually a little bit more fun than the first one. In a lot of ways, like it's more breezy,
Yeah.
and its pace, and I like some of the setup they do, the lore setup, which maybe they get away from in some ways, but I think it works really well, with the shrine that he has to his mom, and that like he's really out there as like, he worshipped his mom, and he like he's doing all this because he knows nothing else, and he's kind of like this fucked up thing that lives out there and is feral, and he'll kill anybody that gets like in his territory, and or that he feels is like disgracing his mother. So it's a good movie. It's a good Friday the 13th movie.
Yeah, it's a good, like you said, like it puts a lot of cool lore in there, a lot of cool like little ideas that I think also sets the series on a trajectory that kind of, I want to say, peaks with four. Like, I think of one through four as like the core of the series, and then it becomes a different thing, and then it becomes a different thing again. But you know. Spoilers, I think two through four are some of the best ones. Like, that's what I think of as the heart of the series, and I think this is a good setup for all that. So I give it a four.
Yeah, I'm gonna give it a four as well. I like looking at it originally when I came out of watching it last night, I'm like, that's it was all right. But like now talking about it, like there's a lot of fun in this movie, and like I had a fun time watching it, and there's a lot of things I really like about it that work for me, so.
Yeah, like the more we, like I even started to think about it more. Like, yeah, I like the he has the shack and he's got a shrine to his mom, and And but like we you said at the end, it's breezy. I said it right at the top. It goes down smooth. It's just fun and easy and quick and kind of well done for what it is, which is super surprising. What's your favorite kill?
So my favorite kill for part two is it's Mark. He's the guy in the wheelchair. Jason hits him in the face with the machete. I don't know if he throws it at him or if he just smacks him with it, but he gets him in the face with the machete, and then Mark's wheelchair cycles back off of the cabin porch and then all the way down these stairs that lead to the lake, and it ultimately ends with a lightning flash and scene cut, but he's like rolling down the hill, jerking away.
Yeah, awesome shot of him rolling backwards down the stairs. That's really funny. I thought you would have said the spear through the bed. My favorite,
like one, yeah.
My favorite is the same as yours.
Yeah.
I've always loved that one. I think it's so cool. Like how he gets whacked and he starts to roll and then he, like then it cuts to, oh shit, he's rolling down fucking stairs.
Yeah.
And somehow he stays level, like somehow he stays like up and like
yeah, he just doesn't just like start tumbling down. It's great. Yeah, I like the spear scene. I mean that's a double kill. It's also kind of reminiscent of the arrow scene from the first one, but it's hard to beat like the machete to the face, and then the wheelchair just kind of like stupidly rolling down the hill.
Yeah, I love that one, but like the bed one with the spear one. I guess it's stolen from an Italian film from the '70s.
Huh.
And two, we've never seen like the full actual version of that because it was way more gruesome. And like it showed, like after he stuck to the spear, like through both of them, like her underneath, like struggling to push the body off and shit. Like,
oh, okay.
They had to cut a lot of that scene to not get an X rating. And I guess I want to say the footage is kind of lost. A lot of as we go through the series, like. Some of these films had to be heavily edited, and like Paramount just fucking destroyed like the footage they didn't use in a lot of cases. So
just so crazy. Like,
sucks.
Just, I mean, you look back and it's definitely the time these movies came out, definitely a more conservative time. But like, if you were to take these films today, I'm not even sure that like they would get an R rating.
They show this stuff on TV now. Like they showed on The Walking Dead, so
right. Like I mean, there's a little bit of nudity in both one and two. Like I mean, we're talking really minimal, and I don't even think it's sexual nudity in part two. Like I think the only actual nudity we get in two is when the girl's going in the lake, like Sandra and Jeff are definitely having sex, but I think the way it's shot, you don't see a whole lot of their bodies. So, yeah, like there's not a lot of nudity, and like really the gore is minimal. Like it's I mean, there's some great stuff, but I really think you could get away with like, I think there are more gruesome things in cinema today that are getting like PG-13 ratings.
I think when you talk about specifically part two, it is not a lot of gore. Like there are cool creative kills, but not a lot of
right.
Part of that was because Tom Savini did not sign on to the project because he thought the idea of it being Jason was stupid, and so he went to do The Burning instead. So it was like a young makeup artist. I don't know if it was Nick Attero or I don't know who it was. A really young makeup artist got to do work on this, but you know, they weren't as experienced in what Savini could do. And then also parts of this got cut to not get an X rating. But,
right.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyways, yeah, it's funny that we both have the same favorite kill. Favorite girl?
Mine is Vicky. She is the girl that is trying to get with Mark, the wheelchair guy. you get an extended shot of her kind of going, she's getting prepared because they're going to go find a cabin. I like her. She has like a good personality and I think she's kind of cute looking. She goes and gets like her special silk underwear, which does not fit very well on her. and she goes and gets the perfume, which I thought was kind of funny because they warn they warn them early on about bears and not wearing perfume, and she's like spraying it not just on her neck and wrist, but also down her panties. So
Well, part of me wanted to go Amy Steele because I think she actually is kind of good looking, and I like her
yeah.
character a lot in this. But mine's the same as well. It's
Oh, really?
fucking crazy that we've gone
Wow.
same on one and two.
We did not talk about these beforehand,
No.
so.
Like, I thought for sure he was. I'm like, oh, well, Chris will probably see the bed one, but I've always loved the wheelchair one. Nope. You like the wheelchair kill.
The wheelchair one is hysterical, man. It's so good.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we're also getting into a part of the series where the kills are going to start getting a little more creative, and we may diverge a bit there.
Yeah. And I'll be interested to see, like, going on, like, later on as we go through this. Like, I have not seen part five in ages, dude. Like, and I'm going into it with an open mind. I've always hated part five because of what it is, but, like, maybe I'll like it more this time. Like, I've heard people say it's, like, the goriest of all of them. So I'm like,
Maybe we come to it from that angle at least then.
Yeah, but it's gonna be, I'm of course excited for next week because we get three and four, which, spoilers, they're my favorite. I've seen them a billion times, but I'm excited for that. But, like, yeah, I'm also excited for down the line. Like, I know I loved Jason X, but I have not seen it since the first time I've seen it. So
Yeah, that one's so much fun.
it's gonna be a lot of fun, like, just going through all these.
I wonder if my favorite kill from that will change, because currently
I
it
don't think
is
mine's gonna change.
mine is currently the where they freeze. It's like the liquid
Yeah.
nitrogen. I love that one.
Forever and always. It's
Yeah.
not changing. It's gonna be the same. So yeah. Okay, just before we totally wrap this up, a few stats I forgot to throw out about part two, which is its budget was 1.25 million and its box office was 21 million. So pretty big drop off from the 39 million it did domestically with the first one.
Still a pretty good haul though, based on like
Yeah.
what they spent on
Oh
budget
yeah.
and
For sure. Yeah, which would explain why this thing just goes on forever. But it's funny to see, like, it just blows my mind that the first one is, like, the highest grossing one, because in my mind, when I was a kid, these were, like, the most coolest, most popular movies ever. Like, everyone was going to see these. Like, it's like, no, it was just there was an audience for it, and so that's how they got to, like, churn out a ton of them, you know?
Right.
Like, it kind of made a stamp on pop culture for sure, but not everyone was going to see these fucking movies. It was teenagers and people who loved horror movies, basically.
Right.
But anyways, that will wrap up our first part of looking back at the series. Next week we'll be back with three and four. So yeah.
Cool.
Come back next week.
Movie dudes.
Do 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 do.